Post, or SaratogaBroadcasting.com. Frankly Speaking is a production of Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated. And now the host of Frankly Speaking, John Frank.
Good afternoon, Saratoga. I'm John Frank, and this is Frankly Speaking. And I'm here today with my co-host and the station manager, Rick Thompson. How are you doing today, Rick?
I'm doing good, John. How about yourself?
Good. You have a good weekend?
Beautiful weekend. My daughter had her first cookout ever. She bought her own place last fall, and she was thrilled to have her mom and dad over for her first cookout. So we had fun. I went next door to a neighbor yesterday, had another cookout. You can tell I like cookouts.
Yeah. I wish I wasn't at too many cookouts. I was doing chores this week. It was clean up the lawn week after tax season. So we were at the, and we went up to the camp and did more work there, but we got a lot done. Well, we're very lucky today. We have two very, very good friends of mine and special guests for our show this afternoon. We have Elio Delsetti, who's currently the chairman of the Civil Service Board. Good afternoon, Elio. How are you?
Good afternoon. Thank you.
And a good friend of mine, Stanton Williamson, who I bought my first suit from back in the early 70s. And
you're showing your age, John.
Right. And you, but I feel like I'm still the youngest in the rooms, which is not bad. And Stan's been at the Camp Hill Casino, and everybody knows Stanton in town. So, like I said, good afternoon.
And good afternoon to you.
This show, there's sort of like a freestyle type show. What we tend to do here in the format of Frankly Speaking is we kind of start at the beginning, you know, of when you guys came to Saratoga, and I ask some questions and we just talk, and the hour will go by very quickly, I guarantee you. Intermittently, Rick will put out a phone number if anybody wants to call and ask a question, and this show also will be podcasted, so if somebody's not currently listening, you can go to our website at www.saratogabroadcasting.com and listen to the podcast. So when you guys go home today, you can see how well you do and critique yourself. So let me start at the beginning. Elio, were you born in Saratoga Springs?
Yes, born here. Two of my parents, both immigrants, a father Italian, mother Polish. And my father was a barber and eventually was a representative of Selmer Interests in Saratoga National Hotel, the Saratoga Inn Hotel. Uh-huh. Mother was a housewife, and he bought my home that I currently live in, and about 60, let me see, I'm older than that. Am I older than that, Stan?
You're old.
That's it. That's true. We've been there for 78 years. So Rock Street has been home, and my life at Saratoga has been a very good one, I think, Stan. And I'll agree, we had a wonderful youthful experiences. And when Saratoga was a gambling town, I know I'm not supposed to mention that anymore. Is that verboten now?
That's what it was predicated on.
Yeah, right, and I think we'll get into that a little bit and ask you some of those questions and, you know, mob-related type things. And
Stanton was younger than I. I was the class of 1952, and class of our classmates. Ron Stanton was a younger, he was 1954. Is that right, sir?
That's right.
And Stanton, were you born in Saratoga Springs?
I was a carpetbagger.
You are, that's correct. Then. Yeah. So where were you from originally?
Well, I don't like to divulge where it was. It's a famous Saratoga. Yeah. But I was brought here when I was 3 months old.
Okay, so pretty close.
I lived with my grandparents on Washington Street.
On Washington Street?
All my life until we sold the house in the 50s.
And how long have you known Elio?
100 years.
Okay. You're rounding down?
Round numbers.
Who's counting?
Yeah, who's counting now?
So Saratoga was obviously a lot different back in the 40s and 50s. You said you graduated in 52 and 54.
Absolutely.
And the school system was, now we have a consolidated school system.
Yes.
Back then you used to have various public schools. Is that how it was in the city?
We had, yes, they were more neighborhood schools.
Okay,
yes.
Not so much today. It's a consolidation and most of us dying off. And in the neighborhoods were some of the many very ethnic in nature. And I went to number 3,
okay,
which was the, how should we define number 3 school compared to number 4 and number 7. I think they were the elite. They were the east side schools. And we had number one, two, three.
Infamous number
four,
one.
Yes, you were number one, and yes, I can't tell them about that school. You'll have to do that. And we had a school, number seven, which is on the fringes of the city now, okay. And then a Greenfield school. And then high school was on Lake Avenue. That was
where the Lake Avenue school is now.
That's right.
And he's talking about the old fire station. That's where he went to school.
1930. That was, I heard they took that down. But that was the original high school, and then they moved up to where Lake Ave Elementary School is, and then probably in the 60s or later they moved out to West Ave.
That's right.
Now some of these schools, and you were number one.
Number one school, yes.
And that was the is that the Italian that's over on Beacon Street
that's
area?
That's right.
Right.
Yep.
And the Irish first, and then the Italians, and then they mixed somehow.
Right. Yes.
The normal process things were, were jointly.
And that's still, that's, Dublin area over there.
Still called Dublin, yeah.
And so you went right through that whole, what was it, kindergarten to sixth back then? Or how
kindergarten to seventh grade.
Seventh, and then the high school was?
Was eighth grade to senior.
Eighth grade to senior.
That's right.
And so both of those schools are gone now.
Yes.
So where was number one located? What building would be there now?
Well, it's not a building. It's part of the recreation, where the recreation field is, where the Lions used to be.
Okay. It was in the quarter where West Side Recreation Field is. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So that was a walking distance from the neighborhood then.
It's a basketball court right now.
That's where the school was.
Beekman Street, yes.
And school number three...
Which was
right by your house, wasn't it?
It's right around the corner. The kids used to envy me because they all, of course, we walked everywhere back
That's
then,
true.
Even to high school, wherever
right.
we were in the city, except for the farm kids. We were lucky to be bussed in, but their life at the high school was kind of sad because they'd get people milking cows at 4 or 5 in the morning and come have a half a day of work.
That's true.
And then come into the high school. And then they had no cafeteria to speak of that I can remember. They had brought their lunches.
Right.
And then they would go home after school. So when you look at our yearbooks, you'll see a lot of the farm kids that were very good students and all, but they had to work the farm. And as a result, you don't see them in the committees where they would have enjoyed or even other kinds of school activities.
Right.
Which was very, very sad.
Sure.
And I do remember that. And they had lunch in the auditorium.
Well,
one of the nice days they would go out.
Right. That's
but
true.
When we all went, that sort of consolidated at the eighth grade level, and it's strange too. A lot of kids with Maple Avenue, Catherine Street, that whole area was once called the Beehive. It was a pejorative term, I guess, because it had large families. It was really likened to a very poor district.
Okay.
And large families and the working class people, very difficult to background or experience, who did mostly would be in the manual labor. But when they graduated, it didn't come to, from number three, I think we had seven people, I could name them, that went from our seventh grade, which had about 20 people or 22 people, to the high school. Now, what happened to the rest of them? Well, the economy, the way the country was, the way the city was. They went off from work for the city, went into the services. They found jobs, and many of them, if you read their obituaries, which we do, unfortunately, you'll see that they did succeed in life.
Right.
But they didn't go on to high school for various reasons.
Right.
And that we make fun of number three district, but there were a lot of poor kids there. Now, today, it's very interesting that you hear certain people talk about it, about the East Side and the West Side. And for years, the West Side was sort of the working class people.
Right.
And when people wanted to socially climb up, they made a few dollars. They didn't want to live on the West Side, so they moved to the East Side.
That's
and
right.
So, it's strangely enough, that there was a conflict, it has been, and certain people that we know, the politicians, often mention that West Side was as good as the East Side. Well, they were wonderful people on both sides, but there were these kinds of tensions and conflict, as well as some ethnic differences too, which prevailed.
Now the school, there's a couple of these schools are still left. There's the one on Van Dam, there's the one over
number two.
On Spring Street.
Number four.
And then the
number
one where Waldorf is, that was the school on, Waldorf School now. It's
on Lake
Avery. I can't remember the street name, but I believe that was one of the schools too, wasn't it?
Well, four still is there.
Yes.
And four.
The Waldorf school, though, is on Lake, isn't
Avenue.
It?
No. It's a couple blocks over. The name of the street.
Well, that would have been it would have been number 7 school, right?
Oh, right.
That
would have been.
So 3 and 1, did they look very similar to those type of schools?
All were identical for attendance purposes.
Right.
They were all identical, same structures, same format, state ordered.
Right.
Yes.
And but we did have something. I don't know about a number 1 school, but we had a boys' door entrance and a girls' door entrance. Did you have that in number 1 school?
Yes.
They segregated us. Yes. And we played marbles on number 3 on the neighbor's lawn. So if we may go over on Cat, there may be some marbles left over. Did you play in marbles in number 1 school? Maybe you were.
Ollie Infree
was a favorite game. That's correct. Absolutely.
Or pitch cards.
I never played pitch cards.
No.
I had a member of my class that became a notorious gambler. You know who that is. He weren't a gambler, were you? I'd never known you to be a gambler. You, I mean, personally.
Who was that?
You.
Oh, no, no.
now, my father-in-law, Elio, went to school. I think he grew up on, Marion Place.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And Bill Clements. I don't know if you know Bill Clements.
Oh, sure.
Bill Clements is...
Yeah, the carpenter. He was a...
I knew him very well.
Yeah, that was my father-in-law.
Your father-in-law?
Yes.
He belonged to the Methodist Church.
Yes, he did.
He used to read when I was in Sunday school. When he was in the service, he used to write letters to people who were in charge of the Sunday school.
Yes.
I think their name was Lodwick, but I'm not sure.
I remember you from the Methodist Church. When I first met my wife, we'd come up here and we'd go to church. Even though I'm Catholic, and the church used to shake when I went into the Methodist Church. I remember seeing you there.
Yes,
once in a while.
But I do remember distinctly reading the people who were in charge of us. They would read the letters.
Yeah. He wrote a lot when he was in World War II, of course, and he was sent over 3 months before D-Day, mm-hmm. and he was in the first 20 minutes of D-Day, and then he went through France and Germany, got injured in the Battle of the Bulge,
right,
and then crossing the Rhine River, he got injured. So he ended up, and then he was in the hospital in Paris, and when he got better, they sent him to Nuremberg to build the cells for the trials. So he got 2 purple stars, 5 bronze bars, 2 purple heart, the arrowhead from the D-Day, mm-hmm. and then their unit got 3 presidential citations.
Huh.
So Memorial Day really means something to us,
yes,
you know,
truly.
Because of what he went through. But yeah, he's a native Saratogian,
yes.
So I figured you guys would know.
Stanton was the president of the Methodist Youth. He was very famous at that particular time.
Okay.
And he also is a
the word.
He is a honorably discharged from the United States Army and was in the he doesn't like to say the Korean War,
was
in the conflict.
No, in the conflict.
And he was in the tank corps before they realized his talent. And they promoted you.
Thank goodness for Miss Seward and typing class.
Now, you can throw a name out. They know
I'm
that,
sure
they or they
do.
Know the mother, or they know the uncle.
Oh, yeah.
And then they can tell you how the whole story in the family came here.
Well, what's interesting is Stanton has collected all of the letters that he has written since, how long have you been doing it? He does have stored all of those letters that people have written to him, or he was in correspondence. And he probably is one, if you go to the, it's interesting that the Catholic Church, St. Clement's, honored him about a year or so ago. And Neil Draves, rest his soul.
Good friend, Neil.
Were Father great Draves. Friends. And every time a friend would die or a person he knew and respected, he would send a mass card. So, and it was, they decided to have a mass for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they did have a mass for him in honor of his constant remembrance of Catholics.
For Stan, you mean.
Yes, but the point
good
was,
health.
The mass wasn't Spanish.
Well, that just happened to fall. When I went to the mass, it was kind of rather than able to do it. And when I got there, I did know some people, because I do go to the church on occasion, the Catholic church. And but suddenly, the place filled up, and there were like 200 people there, most of whom I didn't know.
They were all backstretch workers.
All the backstretch.
And what happened was the mass that was Father Neil had said for me, for my health, it happened to fall on the same day as the Saint of Guadalupe.
Okay.
And that's why Father Sullivan said the mass, because he'd been to South America, and he could speak Spanish, so he gave the mass, you know.
He was a very nice man.
Very nice man. But I said to Father Neil later that I appreciated so much the mass being said for me, for my health, and but the next time maybe they could have it in English. But I did enjoy the
roast. But it was the thoughts.
Yes.
It was a very
You don't know if they were performing an exorcism or not.
Well, I did get up and walk around a lot. But I did enjoy the pig afterwards. The pig dinner.
Well, you know, Saratoga was really, I think, we had a very good childhood.
Very good.
We were only about 8,000 or 9,000. John probably knows the facts by heart. He's so good at numbers. And the lifestyle was a lot different. I say with it, we were very naive, but we were darn good kids. In juvenile delinquents, people looking for jobs, and the struggle the kids are trying to find work here today was almost non-existent.
That's
for
true.
Those that wanted to work.
So, and, for example, you said a lot of the kids, you know, left school after grade school and then go into the high school. You guys obviously continued high school, college, and all these other various things. But what jobs did you hold when you were in grade school and high school?
I know
you had told me like you were a water.
Okay. You got it where the farmer's market is on High Rock Avenue. You know where that is, High Rock Avenue. The Indians used to camp there. Did you know that, sir?
I didn't know you were that old.
they were the native Saratogians, you know, the
original
natives.
They were the guardians of the well, the cone. But I do remember we used to have what we call the High Rock Gang. We were just something like the Cats and Jammer Kids, I suppose. There was nothing threatening or treacherous about us. We just all went down to the park and mingled again, and then someone would teach us how to smoke a cigarette. we had to smoke a cigarette. And then if you were really bad, they let you smoke an Italian stogie, which put you out for a couple of hours.
Oh.
But part of our routine was, because at that particular time, all of the Jewish rooming houses on South Broadway, Caroline Street, Filer Street, people
Spring
would come
Street.
Here, primarily the Hasidics coming out of Europe, and had Springwaters, Baden-Baden, Vichy, and others. This was a beautiful place for them to come for waters for their health. And they would come to visit the wells. Well, now everything is electrified, water, they pump it everywhere. But there was a well right across the street from the existing spring water, and that was a delicious water. They built some years ago a pumping station to pump the water up. But when we occupied it, that's how we made our money, because at the end of the day, we were each assigned a certain type of the day. We'd go over a little tin cup, literally a can, and then there was a nice stream, little tiny stream, where that watercress sweet was growing, and we used to go over and pick. Imagine that. We knew about watercress before the dietitian people knew it. But anyway, I was assigned. Now, you go down, you take your can, you go over to the creek, you come back, you start to pump, put the water until it squeech, and up would come the water. And and you'd have to keep that tapped. So in would come people with their cups, and they tap you on the head, a nice little boy, and they give you a penny, a beesel, something would give you. And this was a kind of an experience of seeing these oddly dressed people and people who spoke funny.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a wonderful experience for
us. That's true.
And our job is to take that. So at the end of the day, we'd all meet on a nice summer evening, and we'd go up to the grocery stores on top of the hill. I've forgotten at the name of the, but there were two grocery stores, and we get tabletop pie and orange soda. And that was our treat for working all day long. But when we grew up, 17, kids, including people like Bobby D'Andrea, his family, many families, the people who we all know and who became public officials, all hustled. Yes. And we go up on the alley, Scroop's Alley, which was behind the post office on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And we pick up in the morning.
Papers.
Papers in the morning. We're there 7:30. Armstrong's Racing Forms News Mirror. And I was about, 110 pounds. The papers were about 250 pounds.
That's right.
Tie them under our arm, run down Broadway to all the restaurants. There was a gang of us exploding out there every day. And we go into the different restaurants and different hotels. And, of course, the United States, I remember that. That was the back act. Part of it was open one time when we were working that before they tore it down.
The Grand
and
Union.
Then in the, that would go with pocket money. But the whole thing was not to make the nickel or dime. It was the tipping. People would give you 50 cents, a dollar, you know, depending on who they were, why they did. Then you take a rest and go up to the track. At the main gate, there was all the tip cards, which are now inside the track. Right. Jack's little green card, yep. Collier's. Yes. And they sold for $1. But they used us because they run, you know, the red light. You run in and out of cars. Here's the tips and the bets. And they put a card on you with 10 winners, 100 winners. There was only 80 races. But anyway, you'd sell this. They'd give you 50 cents. That was a lot of money.
Those days.
And at the end of the day, some Saturdays, you'd pocket $100, $150. And you'd work right into the night. Then you'd have to come back. The pink sheet, which comes out at night, you get 50 of them. Then everybody start running. So the whole day was just full of activity. And, of course, Congress Street was very wide open during the 30 days exclusive activities. If you remember that street,
yes,
don't you,
I do.
Sir? And so that was, people worked. And then they worked at the track and all kinds of menial jobs. There was always something. Kids were always working.
So pretty much the life of the death of the city was those 4 weeks in August, pretty much.
At that 30 days, it was like turning the television off after watching The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
We were back in a little quiet little, city in the country. We were more country than city at that time.
Right.
But that was back to our normal life. Do you remember?
We had a breathing spell.
Yes, yes.
Before you went to school.
Right.
You know, and especially people who had children in school or they rented their places out. They had that week to regain.
How many houses do you even today still paid their taxes by renting out?
Absolutely.
We may be the gem of New York State, but there are people here still need that money.
Most of the stores, especially the grocery stores, relied on the charge accounts.
Absolutely.
That the wealthy people on North Broadway would have accounts all summer and then settle up, and that brought them through the winter months.
That's right. But also, a lot of business as it is today, to a relative extent, is that people charge those little books. I can remember going into the people, families would charge and pay up in the summer.
That's
and
right.
The motto was, if we didn't make it in the summer, we pretty much starved in the winter.
Wintertime,
you know,
yes.
So those, the gambling and those activities, which were very crucial to us.
Absolutely.
And I don't know many people that were murdered or corrupted. There we had one murder. Simone was adopted on the front steps.
Yeah, but we didn't know about that until we were older.
Older, that's right.
I'm sure it was in the newspaper.
We were too busy to pay any attention to something like that.
Right. So did you do the same type of work, Stan, or did you make Gilio do all the work
and
just hang out with him?
Oh, no, he had a soft job. You were out at the lake, swimming.
I worked at the lake. I worked at Kateros Park.
No, yeah. Tell them what you did. You ran.
You're a lifeguard?
I didn't allude to such a lofty level. I was a locker man.
No,
I was the head locker.
But you also had...
I must make distinction there.
But you also had the merry-go-round.
I did on occasion when the man that ran the merry-go-round had a little bit too much to drink and didn't show up to work. We all had a round of running the merry-go-round. They only played two songs. One was Over the Waves. Well, if you ever, and I remember having first indulged with alcohol, and I showed up for work, and instead of being in the lockers, they put me on there. And that went on for 5 hours of that same song over and over and over. I didn't drink for a long time.
So if you hear that song now, you run for a bottle, right?
Thank goodness when they put it in the park, they didn't get that calliope. That was sold separately.
Right?
They have piped in music.
Price.
Now.
I have to tell you, my father-in-law had a job at the bathhouse.
Right.
And you were talking about the Hasidic Jews used to come up, and they would take the baths.
Oh, yes.
And he had to leave the job. First of all, I don't even know if he ever saw my mother-in-law with no clothes on. Okay, I think they were like Hasidic Jews through the curtain. But he used to have to help the real heavy women out of the baths.
And they were deep tubs.
Yes, and they were deep tubs. So he had to give that job up. There were so many jobs like that. Just little things that kids could get a job doing.
No, absolutely. The spa, I forgot to mention, of course, the spa and the spa pool and all the recreational facilities. They added all those part-time summer people. But no, it was quite a thing for us. Everybody,
remember the drink hall down at the bottom of the hill on Spring Street came almost over to Filer Street.
That's
the original
right,
one.
Yeah.
Right. Before they moved it over on Broadway in the trolley station.
Where the parking lot is now? Is that where it burned down, right?
I guess they tore it down.
Oh, they tore it down.
Then it moved up to
to the trolley station.
Yes, yeah. Right. And that's where the original, if I remember correctly, there was a restaurant on the side of it. Then that became the offices for the Chamber of Commerce at one time. When the head of the chamber first came to Saratoga. That was his office there. Okay. Yeah. And then they moved it. Then they had the drink hall, which was the original trolley station.
That's right, yes.
And then they had Cuiza, Hawthorne,
and Geyser.
And Vichy was the most famous.
Most famous.
Yes.
But Geyser water was delicious. The Geyser water was an alkaline based water.
That's right.
And they say that if you wanted to, it warmed your stomach when you drank these spring waters. It had, they say, an effect on your innards. If you wanted, got drunk, you drank the Geyser, and that sort of helped you in the recovery stages.
Yeah.
And then if you were having a little trouble with the movements in your body, you take the Geyser water.
Right.
And I mean the Geyser, you take Cuiza.
Cuiza water.
Cuiza was mildly cathartic. But if you really, 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 and really, really had problems, and many of the older people had that, which we don't have, of course, because we live a different lifestyle now, you understand that, they would go down to number 3 well, which is on the Ballston Avenue Road.
Right.
It's still there, and they put a wall up in front of it now, and that was Geyser water number 3, or Hawthorne number 3,
Hawthorne
excuse
number
me, three. Yeah. And you drank that.
And you ran.
And you couldn't make it. I've seen them. You run. And then some, believe it or not, was so bad that they take that water home and then warm it, heat it up, and drink it before it would take effect. Yeah. But you know one thing about all this work and employment? What had happened, you talk about politics at Saratoga, how important it was. Hmm. And we were nonpartisan there.
Right.
Wink, wink, wink. And people had to go and get jobs from the politicians.
That's right.
And so many families over the years, that I would mention them now, but families were broken up because certain people would be with one party and would get the summer jobs, or their children would get the summer jobs, and the other people would be left out. Of course, we had two great names in the history of politics.
Sure.
Was Jim Larry, who was a very powerful, a brilliant attorney.
Brilliant.
Brilliant attorney. A Saratogian, too. Right?
He was the only one I ever knew that that won a case against the state of New York.
And it was
because his partner was died
Francis
from an accident.
Fullerton?
No, he lived next door to you, as a matter of fact. It was, his wife did.
His name was Netto.
Netto.
Oh, Netto.
Francis,
yes.
Francis Netto. And it was the case that dealt with the trucks that they drive around the community in the wintertime, but what do you call those?
The plows.
Service, the plows and so forth, had no lice on it. And so it was a winter day, a stormy day,
that's,
I guess,
right.
And he hit the back of the, killed him. And that was the case that set the precedent for making sure that state vehicles, or all vehicles for safety purposes, had to be lit with the proper, and that just went on and on until they keep adding
it's
on.
It was parked out by Yaddo.
Yes, but he was I remember him as a young boy, and he was a very, with Mike Sweeney, who had the same kind of class quality about him that people loved and respected. They were really people's people, real deep. But the point I'm making is that there are families who lived for years at swords points, never forgetting who got those jobs. And don't forget, it was the the gambling houses at the lake.
That's true.
They'd hire Saratogans for 25 or 30, whatever the traffic, whatever they did, to go out and stand around, and not for security. They didn't need security. People would get this kind of money. And again, if you were on the in, you were recommended. If you were on the out, you were you didn't get them. And so it meant a great deal. But that was big money for people at that time.
Sure.
One of the things the Saratogians were supposed to do, that's how small we were, I guess, you'd look out and say, oh, here comes Del City. The guy, I suppose Benny the Nose would say, what's he doing here, whatever he says. And he'd go up and say, or other words, which I would be more frightening. And there are cases where wives did go, they got in somehow, and the wives, where they went bust, of course, making their little pittance of wages, and they would go out there, and they'd pay them off and smooth them, because the time the mafia took churches were filled with coal, they took care, they had front men. You talk of advertising agents.
Oh, sure.
They did their own advertising. Sure. Yeah. And so everybody was taken care of. And the last thing in the world that gambling ever wanted to bring here through the mafia was trouble. That would destroy them.
Bad for business.
Bad for business. So, I mean, we know the last big campaign against gambling brought up the corruption, except for you and me. Everybody else saved.
And, you were out on the merry-go-round.
At night.
With the hangover.
But back on the merry-go-round, what do you do with that gold ring?
I didn't get the gold. I thought about it. I have my locker key, though.
You still have.
I'm going to use it at Browns now.
Well, we're going to be building a beach someday here at Saratoga. So yeah, back just a step back for a second. So a bit to the ruthless side, Jimmy Leary. But it was like you had Leary on the Republican. He ran the whole county.
He ran the county.
And then you had Doc Leonard, was a Democrat.
He ran the
who
city.
Was a public safety.
Yes, he
ran the city.
Yes.
But still, most of the jobs were Republican. Where were
you? The strength was in the county, of course. The lake houses, I think, all of them, but. Within the city, we know up by Railroad Place,
Chicago Club.
The Chicago Club was that Costello's?
Gus DiMaggio.
Gus DiMaggio his father were bookmakers. And there were a lot of bookmakers at that time.
Oh, yes.
And that was run primarily with the blessing of the mafia. I think they had influence in those different buildings. And the after-hours Congress Street, of course, was the
entertainment red light district.
Yeah, that was the red light district.
That's right.
And it's one of the most names like Hattie. You remember Hattie's restaurant?
Chicken Shack was over on Federal.
Right, on Federal Street, around the corner. I can see it now. There was a building.
Mr. Mosley's.
That was her husband. He ran the numbers.
Yeah, the cigar store.
Cigar store.
Yeah. John would have been a
home. Don't you love these bookie places that have cigarette or cigar stores? They got like five cigars in the store, and in the back room, there's 10 guys with the blackboard.
Exactly.
We had one of those in Gloversville. The guy had a big cigarette case with three cartons of cigarettes in it, and you go in the back. Tony Lapone went to Mount Carmel Church, and 10 guys in the back with the blackboard net, and here he had a case with three cartons of cigarettes.
That's right. The last of the, it was a pool room, Bob Duval, a local guy, was a pool shooter.
On Church Street.
On Church Street, right where at the back of the bank. It was a building before they cleaned it out. And that's where you saw what you're explaining, the room with the, like you see Bob Hope as Lemon Drop Kid, right? And those pool, the gambling rooms, they go back and be the front selling cigarettes or whatever, and playing pool. But behind the wall was where all the action was.
Yeah.
And truly, if you Damon Runyon was a great, I don't mean to be too arrogant about this, but Damon Runyon, if you read some of his work or saw his movies with Bob Hope, the Lemon Drop Kid, those characters were in Saratoga. We had three pool rooms, I think, or maybe four, but three that I remember. They were hangouts at night where they would come eating in the restaurants, the Paramutual men. Most of the track was all of New York big shots, and a few locals stabbed in. And they would come down, and they'd be downtown and talk, and you'd mingle with you. You'd go in the pool hall, you'd talk with that accent. You thought it was all real. So when you started to grow up and saw the read the material literature or saw movies, I said, I know these characters. I met them in Saratoga. They were there. Sure. Never trouble.
That's what I was going to ask. There was never any big trouble. No. I mean, they took care of their own. They policed themselves.
This is very interesting. The Rip Van Dam was also a medium-priced hotel.
Medium, yes.
Yes, and most of the track...
Well, it was a small hotel compared to the United States and Grand Union, or the Adelphi, even.
Exactly, and the big Gideon Putnam was the creme de la creme of hotel.
Yeah, but that was until the 30s.
Monty Willie's cousin...
No, brother.
Brother ran the hotel. Yes. It was busy, a big race, all the top... Everybody that was anybody worldwide would try to get into the gig. That was the class place.
That's right.
But there was what we called, I remember there was a very distinguished gentleman who looked like KFC's Colonel Sanders. Very mustached, dressed to the nines, always with a lovely lady on his. He was one of many what they called bite men. Mm-hmm. Now, a bite person was a track follower.
Yes.
And they would come to the track. They would be appreciated. And they would be, everybody, the elite would say, how are you, sir? Nice to see you and your lady, and shake hands. So there was something about the mystique of the track that sort of said that these kinds of people had to be taken care of. If not, you'll have bad luck. But these people were paid to be around the track. Good. To be around, it's very interesting. These were called, they put the bite on people.
Okay.
So there were big-time bite men and little-time bite men. But I remember these people were on Broadway. They would go out at not very much. Broadway was walked up and down. And people in Saratoga, or others maybe, not only, but I knew Saratoga, Ed Lewis, a great friend of ours, used to sit on the curb that I recall and watch the people go by. It was people watching on Broadway.
That's right.
And so Saratoga was very exciting for all of us at that time, but we never had...
Then we graduated to Porches.
Well, we did move up.
Yes.
We did move up. And a little bit up, not too far, but just enough to be comfortable. That's it. But that was part of Saratoga, and all these wonderful... At night on Congress Street, there were the After Hours Club.
Jack's
Harlem Club.
The Tally Ho.
The Tally Ho. Burgess's, which is just... And Dorsey's. On the right, that Bill Jones took over the latter days of Congress Street.
By the trestle.
That's right, in the houses. It was real rundown neighborhood. But what was behind the walls, and they had the Pig's Eye, which was an after-hours joint. And what they would do with that 30-day, 24-hour activity in Saratoga, where they would come from the gambling houses, and they would come on Congress Street. Now, you've got to understand that those buildings and Jack's room, the porters were waving the chairs and table. Nobody cared. No. This was Saratoga.
That's right.
This was August in Saratoga, part of the grandeur, the greatness of this community. And these women, I never saw so many gorgeous. They wore their diamonds.
Yep.
And the gentle. Who were they? Who knew? And then there was... who was our friend? Ida Hill played the piano. I was a boy.
When Mr.
Jack, a gentleman, sat out in front. And he would sit out, pretentious gentleman, just watching. It was, and I've forgotten Jack's last name. I don't remember. Jack's Harlem Club. But they were black performers out of New York.
That's right.
Pretty much transvestites or something.
Well, the main headliner was a female impersonator.
Right, exactly.
Yes, and that was...
Phil Black.
Yes.
So I asked Mr. Jack one day, it was about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, it was Saturday, I remember papers, I was tired, because we used to go to the Mosley's, he had the first rotisserie, right in the window. I remember that they became famous, but it was part of his, it was interesting. Hattie probably prepared them and gave him a good class. And I went up to Mr. Jack and I heard this... the music, and I said to Mr. Jack, I said, all right, if I could go in, and he said, boy, I know your father and mother. He said, well, what are you doing out like this? And I said, well, Mr. Jack, I'm hustling. I'm hustling. And he sort of smirked. And I said, I just want to hear the music. I said, and the show or something, I'd be like, he says, you go over there, you're going to take a left. He told me to go behind that plate over there. So I went in. This was the first time I met Phil Black.
Because
afterwards I became involved in the Musicians Union, and that was a whole different world then, of course, but that experience of my youth. Anyway, So you can see the kitchen door was to your left in front. Everybody squeezed in these little cocktail tables. Remember the cocktail? Mm-hmm. If you came in, they didn't care, right? The floors, the place was, and waitresses coming in and out. And here was there's a little recess here where the band was, and I could see Ida at the piano. She had to look over to give the cues. And I'd forgotten who the other two musicians were. That was the band. And then out would come the star of the show. They'd have a warm-up group, of course, of dancers out of New York, right? They brought him up. And then he would start off, and you've got to help me on this because I never forgot it to this very moment. He would start up, he'd come out. He'd be working in his silks on the bar.
Beautiful gowns.
Yes, beautiful gowns. And he'd be working with his silk outfit at the bars. And Joe would be at the bars. And she, he'd go, "Hello, honey, would you like something?" I saw this. It's unbelievable. They were hustling. The guys were drunk. And he said, "I'll meet you later." "All right, baby."
"Yes, right.
You want a drink?" He says, "Yes, I'll have my usual." He said, "All right, don't forget." And I bring this because I remember it well that night when I was admitted that. And then Phil would change into these gorgeous gowns.
Yes.
He was very big in New York City, had the October Ball, as I found out later in life. So up he comes, and the lights go down. I follow these sorts of switches, and then a spotlight would hit him. And there he stands in all his beauty and grandeur. And he said, "Now, I may be brown as a berry,
but that's only secondary.
Because you can't tell the difference after dark." And then he would say, "From the way that I feel when that bell starts to
beat." That was the theme song.
"Well, it's almost like being in love." And that was filmed. But here you are. Now, this is just try to visualize Congress Street as it was. All these building restaurants, all these activity going on. And about 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning, there's an aroma.
Oh, yes.
You'd be going, "What's that smell? No. Gosh, it smells like cooked bakery." At 3 o'clock in the middle of all this activity.
Right.
Lights would come on, Follick's Bakery.
Max Follick.
And all of a sudden, would be there to bake the things for the next day. Here, can you visualize all these people, women going to bakes and all this stuff going on. And here comes this big... You just, and to this day, I see it in my mind's eye. Yeah. Never forget it. I said, "This is." I didn't say it to myself. I didn't know what to say to myself at that time, but it was surreal.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable, right? And they didn't care what was going on in people. They got, and his brother Sid.
Yes, Sid.
Right, and his Max. Max Follick, of course. Gail was a graduate high school with me in my class.
That's right. Max was quite a fella.
But that was Saratoga, you see, with all that. But there's no trouble. Well,
no,
there might have
been
some fights or something, but there was no what you would suspect if it's a whole terrible commute thing happening because this racing activity.
I don't think I saw one gangster.
No, there was nephew fights on Broadway. No, you never saw one, right? They didn't want you to see it. But if they didn't want you to see, they want you to know anything, right?
No.
But to one extent, I remember once I'd write a thesis when I was working on an advanced degree, that I would write a piece, and I met Mike Sweeney, Judge Sweeney, who was a very, very good, kind man to me. On the corner in front of the post, I says, "Well, what are you going to do now that you're good?" So I said, "Well, I thought I'd write a little history on the history of lawyers and doctors in the gambling business in Saratoga." And he snapped back at me. He says, "You better publish it posthumously."
Yeah. Now, wasn't he the judge that sentenced that big gangster to prison for like 30 days? Was it Luciano?
Or Lucky Luciano?
Yeah.
And
he was the county judge, though. He was the city judge.
No, he was a Supreme Court.
He was Supreme Court.
Oh, okay. There was a judge that was in Saratoga for years and years, and he sentenced one of the big gangsters from New York to jail for 30 days, and the gangster didn't like the food that they served him, so the judge allowed the chef from the hotel to bring lobster and steak down every night.
That was Doc. That was Doc.
Okay.
Doc, local bootlegger. Wonderful man.
Yeah. But he was not a doctor.
No,
why did they call him Doc?
I don't really know.
I never know. Louis, his son was my classmate.
That's
well.
Right.
And I think one of his
grandson. Yeah, right.
And
he was a very kind man.
Yes, he was. Everybody, and they tried to. There was somebody I met, a friend of ours, who was trying to do a pictorial. You're another gentleman. We is doing
Peter Olson.
Yes, Mr. Olson was doing a in pictures, a history of Saratoga. He wrote one.
Oh, that's right. You told me about that. Right.
And he was starting another one. I remember.
That's right.
And he said, I think he told me, or was it he or someone else, that when he went over to interview people in Dublin today, and mentioned Doc.
Yes.
And he could not find one single person
that said anything derogatory.
Absolutely right. Could not say anything bad. No. Well, you have an experience with the Bardino was another very
absolutely.
I mean, they had the oil business and Doc,
on the
whatever
corner
you want.
Because
and he had a lot of action out of pocket. I think that maybe debts weren't paid back. But
when I opened the house after I got out of the service. Oh, I'm 58, and I went over. I went to school with his son, Chucky, in grade school. But he said, I hadn't seen him in a long time. And I said, well, I've been in the service, but I'm reopening the old house. And he said, well, what's the problem? And I haven't gone back to work yet. I was working, I had worked at the men's shop for a long time. And I said, we converted to oil. And he said, well, you need some oil to, because it was getting cold, it was October. And I said, but I won't be able to pay you until I resume working, whenever that's going to be. And he said, holds 100 gallons. He said, be there at 3 o'clock. Man came over. He said, when you get it, give it to me. And that's all there was.
There were no signing papers.
I didn't sign anything.
Didn't sign anything. Promise. No. Take an oath.
No.
That's the way they operated.
That's right.
Here. And they were neighbors.
That's
they
right.
They lived. They were neighbors. In the ethnic community and the whole city, but they were.
But that's the way it was in most communities back then. Because I know when I grew up in Gloversville, my grandfather had a $10 gold piece, and he would buy groceries. And if because he was a tailor, if he was short, he would give the store owner the gold piece, and he'd keep it in the safe. And when my grandfather came in the end of the week to pay, he'd give him his gold piece back. He never did anything with it. But,
no.
I mean, that was just the way they did business.
Right.
On
exactly.
A handshake
that's
and a all. Promise, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. And all those, the sadness is that we've become this brand new city, mm-hmm. right? And it's probably a very good thing economically and in other ways, I would assume. But you've lost the neighborhoods.
And the grocery stores were the
mom and pops.
That's right.
That's right. And
that
the local restaurants over in Dublin.
Yes.
The trouble store. If those restaurants still existed, the Arts Council, I think, would have a better opportunity because there would be people coming to these restaurants.
Right.
There was De Gregory.
De Gregory's.
De Gregorio was their Italian. De Gregorio. Rossi.
Fusco's.
And, of course, classmate of mine was... Rossi, and then around Calamaria's. And Fusco's. Those were five restaurants, four or five, and then was one up the street. I think it was I forgot the street, but it was another. It was five, I think.
There were five of them, yes.
Yeah, and all gone now, but everything different. That was the place people went in.
They were family-owned businesses.
And they were family-owned businesses, and the grocery stores.
Scudder's.
Scudder's was for a long time. You remember he just... they closed down and
Desidoro,
yeah.
And the main one, well, to me it was the main one because it's where our family went was on Beekman Street was the Biffers store.
And the Biffers, that's right. And many of them changed their names from the time it became anglicized, you know,
because it was
necessary for a lot of them.
Well, that's true, especially when
some families
people.
Carry Anglo-Saxon names that really. Had nothing to do with Great Britain, but
that's right.
It's interesting to know their history, right? These families, I can know they did so much for the community. They were active in the community. They were active in the clubs.
Right.
Now, St. Michael's Day, my father was much attached to that. Used to have that ceremony, replicating what they do in their hometowns in Italy, right? Princessa Elena, the princess of the House of Savoy in Italy.
Three-day affair, Friday, Friday night, Saturday, and
that's
Sunday.
That's right.
And Stan was nice enough a couple years ago to give me, Mrs. Signore wrote the had the book over on the west side, and then they would climb the greasy pole to get to the flag.
Oh, that's right, right, and right.
All the, yeah, and all the...
And, you know, it's actually, Principessa Elena, of course, they give you half Italian or something to try to encourage people with some kind of connections to Italian family to join, but that's the last building in Dublin that represents, it could be a museum if the Italian families had brand there were trophies, there were pictures of families, it could be loaded. I guess there was some effort, I don't know why it didn't succeed, but before all of us go, maybe they'll return that to Prince, because that really is, it's a viable organization, and it really should be the curator of things Italian.
But they need your generation to do that, because the generation today wouldn't even think about doing anything like that, you know?
No, you're probably right.
It's they don't have that nostalgia.
And that historical. Yeah, the first generation kids, they spoke Italians. I spoke Italian, really, surely did when I were Polish, I spoke. But anyway, but they don't speak. That language is all gone. And then, of course, the characterizations of these wonderful people who had those accents, which you appreciate being in the voiceover business, right? You nuts and nuts and nuts. What's the matter, you? You know, hey,
well, my grandfather, my grandparents were from Italy.
Right.
And when I grew up, I mean... The accent was great, because when they had friends over, he wouldn't allow his friends to speak Italian if we were around as kids, because he always said, I'm in America now, and I don't want anybody thinking that we're talking about them.
Right.
But I loved when they would talk, because they spoke half Italian anyway, because, you know, they could, but it was great. I loved that accent.
Yeah. You know, we used to play gin rummy, and the old timers brought this expression in. We'd be playing gin, and then somebody would go, hey, Fat America, chinga, chinga, chummy, go gin rummy. So then say, I go gin, he goes, smun. Fat America, I made it in America. Fat America, chinga chinga chung. And it was this kind of spirit, you know, that only they could have coming from the old country. My father was from Florence, and he used to say, he'd go over there and he says, you know, they all don't like me. I said, why, Dad? I says, you're all right. No, they still don't like me. He says, you know, they don't speak Italian. I said, what do you mean they speak? I said, I hear him speak. Isn't that Italian? He says, yes, but... He says, I want you to always remember. He says, non sono parli italiano, parla fiorentino. He says, don't speak Italian. You're speaking the mother of Italian, Florentine.
Yes.
You know, he was very proud of that. But there was something, but that's all gone from our memories. And it's a great tragedy that's happening all over the world.
You seem pretty sure. You know, the worst part was... these guys always, we have like, whenever there's a parade, we have a couple of bottles of wine on the porch after the parade. And I said, geez, guys, we'd love to have you on the show. And I said, I think knowing the two of you, like I know you, we'll probably have you on a number of shows.
Because
we haven't got them out of fourth grade yet up to this point. And Stan's like, geez, I don't, an hour's a long time. And he was like, how long do we have to speak? And I said, an hour. And I said, if I get 10 words in edgewise, I know I'm not doing my job, because people don't want to listen to me. We still have about 5 minutes left, Rick.
Actually, we got a good 7 minutes for an hour.
So. Yeah, what would you like to us?
Well, definitely, I you don't feel nervous here. Everything seemed to work out pretty well, right, Stanton? You enjoy this, right? It's just like sitting in a room, talking.
Well,
this is great.
If you had a little...
One of my memories of when I was young, perhaps, was when I lived on Washington Street. I was probably 12. And I had a Kool-Aid stand on the corner of Walworth and Washington. And about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, this bevy of women, it would be up, the house is still there, it's near what is now the lumberyard, Allardyce's. And the Wilsons lived on the corner, and next to that was this L-shaped home, a house. And they would come down through that garden, and they'd walk down the railroad tracks, which was next to my house. And they'd come by. They're all dressed gorgeous with jewels and the hair all done. And I'd say, And then they go up the railroad line, up the tracks, and they disappear. And I say, I wonder where they're going. Once in a while, they'd give me a quarter for my Kool-Aid. And I'd say, I wonder where they're going, you know. And then I wouldn't see them again until the next afternoon.
Yes.
You know, once until I was much older.
They were on the night shift.
On
the night shift.
That's when they started following them, you know.
On the night shift. But that is an experience.
It's true. It's true. And they were gorgeous.
Did they ever say to you, you're a good-looking little boy?
No, I was just glad to get the quarter.
Yeah. But they did comment on his Kool-Aid. You know? He has some nice Kool-Aid there.
Then there was one gentleman that lived on Outer Washington Street, what was then called Outer Washington Street, before you got number 8. I don't know. I think he was a Shakespearean actor or something. He had very distinguished white hair, wavy hair, always wore a great big sunflower in his jacket. I mean, real sunflower. A bright checkered jacket. And I went by and I had my Kool-Aid stand. I said, would you like a glass of Kool-Aid? And he put his, I'll never forget, he put his, like Napoleon, in his hand and said, I drink nothing but champagne.
Oh, jeez.
And on he walked. I never found out who he was. You know
Elio, you made a comment. I don't want to take away from John here, but you made a comment about that spring number 3.
Yeah.
And well, you know why there were so many Indians around here named Running Deer and Running Fox? It was because they drank that water.
And it cured everything.
Well, they had to keep running. Yeah.
Right. That's very good. And it's probably true. Can you imagine explaining to Sir William Johnson about the water that comes in one end and goes out the other? I mean, why would you build the restaurant at the top of the hill? That's the food was kind of bad. But I think that Saratoga, I mean, we can down Broadway. I mean, in my mind's eye, I can go up North Broadway and name almost every single house over the year. Right. And when I was a young committeeman in the district, I mean, these stories are so, I never forgot them. My wife and I had just married, and I was a young committeeman in the Democratic Party, and I would take these petitions out, you know how this is. Okay, so it's now in October, I think it was in October, the chilly, and I bring. So I'd start up, and I used to know almost every family, whatever their persuasion was. We were friends, for gosh sake, lifetime. I mean, why, there was not that animosity there, no. Right? But you did get excited, but it wasn't anything of significance. And I used to go up to one house, and I can't mention names, I think they're still alive. But anyway, I knock on the door, and Ethel, her first name. And she said, come on in, come on, Eli. They used to call me Eli, because my mother couldn't pronounce Elio.
No.
And so I became Ely. Anyway, I didn't know who I was at that time. But anyway, it helps. So I go up and sit down. Oh, Ethel, she says, have a drink. I said, Ethel, I got it. She see the petitions. Once she saw the petitions, you got you. You ain't going to leave until you get to, hopefully, the name. Now,
Mrs. Ellison?
Yes.
He didn't say that, though. He didn't say
that. Do you know my daughters? Oh, yes. How are you? Nice to see you. But I'll tell you, this is a true story. I get about 4 houses, I would have drinks. You know, I'd be blasted. So in this one house, I went in, there were a woman and her niece. And I went in and I said, how are you doing? She's fine, good, we talk. How's your mother? How's your brother? What are you doing with your life? You know, there's all those nice, great questions. People are concerned, they were sincere. And then I finished and now, I suppose I have to sign those. I said, yeah, and then he went through it. I said, but where's your niece? Oh, she's in the other room. I said, well, do you mind if I bring this? She says, not at all. So I opened the door and she's in the tub. Talk about friends. This is a true story. She said, how you doing? I said, I'll come back tomorrow. I'll see you later.
Oh, the heck with that. You get her signature while she's in the tub, Elio. Come on.
I passed that. I lost her signature. But I mean, and Monty Woolley, the great story of Monty Woolley who came to retire here. Do you remember Monty Woolley, the great actor, man,
yes,
who came to dinner?
Right.
Whom we know much about. Lived around the corner. You know the house.
Right. The house is still there.
It's still there. And I'll just The ladies, I said to the ladies, Mrs. Williams was the housekeeper.
That's right.
And she was a Democrat, her husband, Williams family.
2 minutes left.
2 minutes. Yeah. Well, anyway, I'll make it quick. So I kept going in. He says, is he coming? I said, I'm going to get him. So I used to go knock on his door and say, Mr. Willie, says, I'm not interested. Slam the door. And he had his pie made a pattern. And he was with that flair and everything. So finally, after several times, boom, no, couldn't get him. Don't come back. Don't bother me. Come election day, I went to Mrs. Williams, and the girls at the polling place said, well, you're not going to bring him. I said, I'm going to get him. But they closed the bars then. He used to hang out at the Colonial with his watering hole.
That's right.
So I didn't know the bars, where you go, the Colonial wouldn't do. So I found out he went to the Gideon.
Gideon, yeah.
So I rode to the Gideon. Judd Pemberton was the superintendent of service. Yeah. So he saw me come in, and he says, I know why you're here. He says, but you're not supposed to be here. I said, I understand that. He says, and he gives me the wave, go down to the bar, which was at the end, at the bend. And there was Myron Malty, his cousin, and another gentleman, the bartender. So I walked right in, and I hear, Mr. Woolley, and I know he turns and startled him. Anyway, and he says, I told you, and I'm coming. He says, Mr. Woolley, we've got the president, we've got to elect this man, we're going to do it. And he, I went, I don't know. Then I voice, young man, Myron, yes, sir. I figure he's going to say, why don't you get out of here and stop bothering people? He says, may I ask you a serious question? I say, yes, sir. He says, isn't it against the state law to take drunks to the polls? And Marty, who is drunk? How dare you? I am not drunk. I am coming. Young man, take me to the polls. Honest, that's a true story. I love that story. And, of course, I don't know how we voted, but the girls at the poll were very happy to see him. Hello, Mr. Woolley. Nice to see you, Mr. Woolley. So, I think those are good things you remember. But with us, we're going, I think it's almost so late to really get, they're starting now, some nice people are starting to take the history of Saratoga. And I hope they do meet with our classes who have their breakfasts and go over and you sort of verify what they have is to be, close to the truth as you can get it.
Well, I know you guys have some busy schedules, but I'd love to have you both on again.
Well, thank you.
Maybe Stan will get a chance to talk.
My price is going up.
Your price is going up. And, again, we'll have this webcast, so you can so you can listen to this on the podcast. And I really appreciate you guys coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
We haven't had a lot of guests, but I can tell you, the two of you have been by far the best so far.
That's right. All right.
And my wife was one of the guests, so I'll probably be in trouble.
Next time we come on, we'll tell the truth.
Okay. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.